This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Charlotte's new mayor, Jennifer Roberts, has only been in office for about 100 days, but one of her first major accomplishments has already caused a ruckus in Raleigh. Yesterday, the General Assembly went into special session to deal with our city's recently passed LGBT ordinance, which was due to go into effect on April 1st. There has been a raging controversy over public restrooms as the result of that ordinance, and the legislature felt it had to get involved. We'll talk about that, about some of the other initiatives Mayor Roberts has promoted during these early days in office, and about some of the other items on her to-do list. Jennifer Roberts joins us for the hour for the first time as mayor. Welcome.
Good to be here, Mike.
Good day to be here, I suppose. Yesterday, as I just said, the legislature went into special session over our LGBT ordinance, which Charlotte passed recently, was to have gone into effect on April 1st. Before we talk about the legislature's involvement in all of this, talk about the ordinance. This came very early in your administration. It was a second look at an ordinance that failed the first time around prior to your taking office. Why was it so important to you that this passed this time?
Well, this was a topic of conversation throughout the year. After the ordinance failed the first time, of course, we had campaigns going on. Many citizens in the city during campaign season, at forums, community meetings, I heard from a number of people that Charlotte needs to be competitive, that we want to be a city that is inclusive, that treats all our citizens equally, that shows our LGBT residents that they are part of our economic prosperity, that we want to make sure that they have the same access that everybody else does. We heard it during the campaign. It was discussed over and over. We also had a public forum about it early February, where people could delve into more detail about what does transgender mean, because that's something that people genuinely need more information about, had not had a chance to hear from that perspective. So we had a very extensive public conversation throughout Charlotte on this topic.
Think it was enough? I mean, if people need to be educated on transgender and what it means, and what it means to those who are transgender, and it's a foreign concept to, I would think, probably the majority of people, was there enough time, was there enough discussion, was there enough exploration of that so that there could be less fear?
Well, it was a lot more than the 9 hours the General Assembly took to overturn it. I think that we continue to have this conversation, and there are many leaders in our business community and as our community leaders as well who are working hard. Our faith community has had several forums to bring people together around what does it really mean to treat people with respect and dignity. What does it mean to include people? How far does that go? What about people who have, family members who are transgender? There are whole support teams. I've talked to some of our companies. They have a support team for people who are going through transition because they want to make sure that they recognize that talent comes in all forms. We want to help people feel like they can be themselves in their workplace and also when they're here in our city. And it's an evolving conversation.
Did the General Assembly's action yesterday surprise you?
I was surprised by the lack of transparency, the speed of action, and the lack of communication in general. I had heard that, as we all heard, there might be a special session. Did not think that they would go to that length. Wanted to have more time to have a community discussion, to have businesses weigh in. There are a lot of questions we haven't answered yet. The Title IX issue that you brought up, I just looked briefly at some of the other parts of our country that have had the issue when a transgender young man or young woman is using facilities at a university or a school. Mm-hmm. The federal government has ruled in favor of the transgender person in most of those cases, but we haven't had a chance to really explore. They said with
but it's March 24th, and this was due to go into effect in 6 days, and we didn't have a chance to explore it. So my point, my question, I guess, is why the hurry? Why not put it off for 6 months?
No, what I was about to say is we haven't had a chance to explore the ramifications of the hasty action on the part of the General Assembly. We explored it from our perspective of being inclusive, but we don't know what impact what they have done is going to have.
They went well beyond removing the restroom part of this ordinance. They removed it all and then went further. Do you worry that you have helped the legislature set a precedent now to become involved in local affairs, again, here or in other parts of the state? And they've been trying to do that with our airport, with water systems in Asheville, in, I think, municipalities in Greensboro, municipal elections in Greensboro. Is this more fuel to that fire? Now they've done it.
Well, we have known. I mean, I was a county commissioner for 8 years, and we know that the majority of the power resides with the state. We also know that North Carolina is not a one-size-fits-all state, and there are certain things that local governments need to be able to provide for their citizens that may not be the same everywhere in the state. You know, zoning regulations, some of the water quality issues, some of the things that are different in urban centers than they are in rural places. And that is something that we'll continue to have a conversation about. But, you know, we have known that the state has the authority. We're not a home rule state. That is clear and evident to any local official. We want to make sure that things that are reasonable for local governments to control remain in their ability.
What you just said about we're not a one-size-fits-all state goes against what Paul Stamm of Wake County said yesterday in the debate. He kicked off the debate by saying that this is about consistency in intrastate commerce, that if you go to Hickory, you should expect the same regulations and rules that you would face in Charlotte or down east. That seems to fly in the face of what a lot of Republicans say about states' rights at the national level, but it's in complete disagreement with what you just said.
Well, I think that power is an interesting thing, and we have seen a lot of inconsistency in what one political party puts forward as being, you know, whether you want local control or whether you want a larger control, federal or state. You know, it is a delicate balance. We are in conversation with our state and federal officials all the time. It's one of the things I wanted to do in my administration to make sure we are having those conversations and doing what is appropriate at the local level and letting communities have authority over how they're going to grow and how they're going to attract business and how they're going to compete.
Do you worry that by pressing this issue early in your administration and having it overturned yesterday by the legislature, after it was clear during city council meetings that there was vocal opposition to what you were trying to do, that you have made matters worse? You tweeted yesterday that after the House passed their bill, the bill was worse than Indiana and Georgia, provides freedom to discriminate against the LGBT community. It sanctions, you said in a memo that you put out later, it sanctions discrimination against the LGBT community and repeals local protections against discrimination based on race, color, national origin, and sex, replacing them with a statewide prohibition with no consequences by those who discriminate, and that they have actually, you say, opened the door to discrimination against anyone for any reason. Those are your words. So have you made matters worse?
I think that the right time to talk about equality and inclusion is right now. I think that we have to stand up for including citizens, treating them equally. That's what democracy is about. It's about equal treatment before the law. We know that discrimination exists, and what the legislature passed makes it possible if there's a restaurant or a hotel who wants to say no to gay couples or to gay people in general. They can actually put a sign out front and say, no gay people welcome here, no service for gay people, and that will be perfectly legal. And that isn't right.
But that is, Brian has emailed us, one of our listeners. Please ask Mayor Roberts if she accepts any responsibility for what just happened. I really want to know. As a gay man, a professional, a taxpayer, and someone who loves calling North Carolina home, I fully blame her and the Charlotte City Council for what just happened here in North Carolina. She should have known better, given the climate of the country and our legislature after the marriage equality fight and the courts from last year. And throw in the fact that the legislature is still looking for payback over the airport debacle, and any sophomoric political science major could have seen that now was not the time to push the issue of bathroom equality for transgender people. I sympathize, I do, with them, but society's not ready to be open to trans book of leaning just yet. Then he goes on to say, and I'm not sure this is a fair statement, but he goes on to say it was her arrogance and blinded bravado that built the bridge by which the legislature just drove North Carolina into the worst discrimination policy in the country. It may now take a lifetime of trying to dig this state out of the backwater mess she helped to create.
Well, there we go, blaming the victim again, right? So I think that we had conversations. The most that we heard was that there would be a move to take out the facilities portion, the public accommodations portion. We did not know this would provoke such an overreaching, inclusive of the whole state, and prohibiting things like minimum wage, which had nothing to do with this conversation. Just a clear overreach of power, and we did not anticipate this, and I would not knowingly provoke. I will be attacked. I have been attacked. I've had death threats before. I am here for a better future for all, and I am doing what I believe is in the best interests of the city of Charlotte to be a 21st century global city where talent is included, is valued, is respected. And sometimes in the arc of history, there are some setbacks, but I truly believe in the long run that justice will win and that people will be accepted and people will be included because talent comes in all shapes and forms.
You're a Democrat. 8 Democrats in the House yesterday voted for this bill. All of the Democrats in the Senate walked out. How do you explain the difference?
I wasn't part of those conversations, so I'm not sure what their reasoning was. I know that the side opposed to this did a good job of making it all about one issue, which was not the issue, and did a better job of telling a story about things that have not been happening in the more than 200 cities and counties who have had this ordinance, including Orlando, where Disney World is, including Atlanta, including Charleston, Columbia. You know, our South Carolina neighbors have had this for years, cities we compete with. But the other side
Do those cities have the transgender bathroom ordinance? Part of their.
They have very similar ordinances.
Do they have the transgender portion in their ordinances that provide that protection?
I can't tell exactly how theirs are all worded.
The answer to that question? You told WFAE's Duncan McFadden that you wanted this ordinance because Charlotte needs to stay competitive. You've said that to me this morning, and that you were following the lead of over 200 cities that have ordinances in place for years. Why don't you know the answer to that question?
They are like that. They do have that.
Unequivocally, you can say that.
I just checked with my source. And I tell you, I have not had time to read each of those individual ones. We have gotten information from some national organizations that have been talking about equality and inclusion, and I'm basing it on what we know from them, and that this discussion has happened in other states and other cities, and there have not been the incidences that we're worried about.
We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk about a lot more than just this ordinance that was overturned yesterday. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Discovery Place, presenting Body Worlds and the Cycle of Life, the new exhibition with over 100 real human specimens displaying the differences in the human body due to distress, disease, and optimal health. Tickets at discoveryplace.org. And UNC Charlotte Executive Education, now offering programs in analytics, innovation, leadership, and ethics. More at exec-ed.uncc.edu. On the Charlotte Talks Weekly News Roundup, the state legislature went into special session, as we have all been talking about this morning, deal with the LGBT ordinance here in Charlotte, and then took things a little further. City Council worries about their media room being bugged. The first public beach in Mecklenburg County opens on Lake Norman. Matthews considers splitting from CMS, and the Hornets are hot. Those stories and more with our roundtable of reporters tomorrow on this program at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the bombings in Belgium have left many wondering why authorities were unable to thwart the attacks. Understanding unique security challenges for Belgium and what these latest attacks mean for threats to Europe and beyond.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins on listener-supported public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking with Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts. We're going to be talking about her first 100 days, some of the other things that have been accomplished, and some of the things on her to-do list. But, of course, the big news is that yesterday the legislature went into special session specifically to overturn, and they did so successfully, the ordinance that would have extended protections to LGBT people, including the use of bathrooms of the choice of transgender people with the gender with which they identify. That's been overturned, and the legislature took it a couple of steps further. And State Senator Buck Newton, who is running for Attorney General, kicked off debate in the Senate by asserting that the General Assembly action on this is good for business. This is exactly the opposite of what you have said, that this is good for business to have this ordinance. We need it to remain competitive. Surely there is evidence that one of you is right and one of you is wrong. Is there any empirical evidence that these ordinances make a city more competitive or that the lack of them is good for business?
Well, we know in other states that have considered similar restrictions and similar discrimination, we know that there have been outcries and that actually a couple of governors have vetoed similar legislation. South Dakota is one. And Georgia is considering doing that, where it was clear in the business community. And I've had business owners tell me that they're concerned within their company. They are completely inclusive and they treat everybody equally. But they're concerned that when their employees leave their place of work and go out to try to go to a restaurant or get a taxi or stay in a hotel, that they will be denied service. And they are concerned that their employees, therefore, feel like second-class citizens.
Several companies, Dow Chemical and Red Hat, came out yesterday against legislative action, saying that their companies value diversity. And there were rumblings by some at the federal level that the result of this overturning of this ordinance may jeopardize Title IX funding throughout the state of North Carolina. And if I'm correct about this, I believe I heard this report this morning that Tennessee backed away from a similar situation because of the fear of losing Title IX funding. Do you have a take on that?
Well, that's why I'm surprised that our governor was so quick to sign this, because there are a lot of cases where governors have vetoed, where companies have weighed in, where citizens have weighed in. There was no time for discussion. There was no time for the community to absorb this. There was no time to have some of those questions answered about Title IX, about our university system, and about what federal action might result from this. There was no time. 9 hours.
Mm. You've said that you would have hoped, given all the faces our state, all the things that our state faces from education, all the problems, education infrastructure, that cooler heads would have prevailed and attention would have been focused on the big issues. And yet they called a special session to focus on a local issue. On the other hand, there are those who say that you chose to push this issue front and center, making this your Obamacare, essentially, and that there are other issues that the city faces that could be called more important or more pressing.
I've been doing a lot of things, Mike. I have not been spending all my time on one issue. I've been working on numerous things the city is facing right now. I've been helping small businesses and really working to make sure that the obstacles they face, if they're minority-owned, if they're small, if they haven't had access, that they have an opportunity to grow and prosper. I've been working with an after-school initiative, had almost 400 people come together who are parents, teachers, after-school providers to talk about how we support our young people when they're not in school, because we want to be great partners to our schools. I do want to support our youth and make sure they're going to be successful. We've heard from our police chief, it's also a matter of public safety, because those hours between 3 and 6 are some of the most dangerous times for young people to get involved in the wrong group and doing the wrong things. And so we've had huge mobilization around that. We've been increasing the youth employment program that the city has run for years so that we have at least we have dozens more of our employers helping our young people with internships and apprenticeships. I've been working on Eastland Mall. I've been working on increasing our global outreach. We have a meeting this afternoon, in fact, of a whole new Mayor's China, Charlotte China Business Committee, so that we are going to increase investment and trade and commerce with China, which is very interested in Charlotte as a growing city.
You said earlier that the rapidity that with which the legislature took this action surprised you. And you also told R. Duncan McFadden that you'd been in conversation, you and colleagues on the city council had been in conversation with members of the legislature over this issue and had been hopeful that they would allow you to maintain local control over this issue. If you were talking to people, why did this surprise you? I had Dan Bishop on this program several weeks ago, and he made it very clear what his intent was.
Well, there are 170 members of the legislature. And so when you talk to some of them and you ask them and you talk to people who spend a lot of time in Raleigh and have had conversations with others and you ask them to predict things, you get different answers. Mm-hmm. There was no clear and maybe they were just hiding things from us. Maybe people were not giving us the right information on purpose. That's possible as well. But we acted on the best information we had through numerous conversations. And I was surprised at the speed. I was surprised at the breadth of what was proposed.
Peggy emails, Jennifer Roberts and Patrick McCrory know each other. He's the governor, for people who don't know that. Do they have a good relationship, working relationship? Did he call her regarding this bill? Did you call him regarding this bill?
I called him and I texted him and I spoke to his assistant. He did not call back.
The longtime seven-term mayor of Charlotte did not call the current mayor of Charlotte over this issue?
People are busy. we are working very hard to communicate. I do not have a problem communicating. I am happy to speak with people who have different opinions than I do, and I listen. And you know, people who live in Charlotte and have watched me as a commissioner know that I do that, that I do listen very hard. I understand there is opposition. Anytime you take a vote, you're going to disappoint some people.
When this ordinance failed in the fall, it failed because they wanted to remove the transgender bathroom piece of the legislation but passed the LGBT protections of this, and one of the city council members said, no, it's all or nothing. I'm paraphrasing. Did it ever occur to you that we could pass this without the bathroom thing and we'd be fine today?
Well, it was actually a year ago when it was first considered, when it failed, when there was an amendment put in to remove the facilities part of it, to remove the showers and bathroom facilities. And it did not pass city council. And I knew where the votes were, and it was clear that leaving out a portion of LGBT, just doing LGB, without including transgender folks in equality and inclusion, was not something that was going to pass. The Charlotte City Council was not something during the campaign that all the numerous public conversations that people had was not something that showed the desire to truly be inclusive.
There are a lot of people who claim to be genuinely afraid, genuinely fearful and suspicious of this. They're fearful for their children. They're fearful for women who may have to use bathrooms that are being occupied by people of the opposite gender, even though they identify as the gender of the name on the bathroom door. Why doesn't this concern you, and why are they wrong to be afraid?
Notwithstanding the fact that there has not been an incident like this in the 200-something other counties and cities, let me be clear about the facilities issue. This is really about discrimination. When you talk to people who are opposed, and I've heard from many people, and ask them if we take out facilities, would you still be opposed? And they say yes. This is about discrimination. This is about prejudice. This is about people who truly do not want to serve gay couples in their hotels and restaurants. And I think that that is not democratic. I think that is not 21st century. And if they want to have a private club, they can continue to do that. But if they are truly serving the public, you know, these are the same arguments we heard in the 50s and 60s with African Americans, with interracial couples, with women, with so many groups who were considered children of a lesser god.
As State Attorney General and gubernatorial candidate Roy Cooper, a Democrat, said the legislature's bill is putting discrimination into law, and he blamed Pat McCrory. Pat McCrory didn't call the legislature into session. He's even said on television that the ordinance, though misguided and out of step with North Carolina values, is probably legal. So Cooper has now introduced this as an issue in the gubernatorial campaign. Is that what this really is, a political football?
For some people, it definitely is. For the Charlotte City Council, well, I can speak on behalf of myself, but in the council, we were really focused on Charlotte and working with our Charlotte community. Did not anticipate it to be this broader issue. But you know, some people will use it politically. Some people are going to make it that political issue that they're going to try to push.
How does the city council, how do you intend to respond to this legislative action?
Well, we're going to have to look at, do some research on what are the implications. Again, the Title IX issue is a big one. And see if there are any other unforeseen, unintended consequences, because we've only had a few hours to actually start looking at that. And there's a lot of case law. There are a lot of other things that the EEOC has worked on around the country that we know some of that. But we're going to have to delve into that the way this one is written, because we didn't have the actual wording until the last second. So that's one thing. The other thing is that we are going to continue to talk about being inclusive. We are going to make sure that we as a city and everything that we do, whether it's public safety, whether it's neighborhood development, how we operate our airport, all those things, we are going to continue to work very hard to show our LGBT business owners and residents and neighbors that we have values that are inclusive, that we don't see them as second-class citizens. We are going to try to do everything we can to show the world that we are democratic and we are inclusive.
Have you had a chance? It's been very quick. I'm sure the answer is no, but have you had a chance to assess the impact of this on a national level? Caitlyn Jenner yesterday tweeted about this issue, naming Pat McCrory as part of the problem. She says, another day, another time for us to stand together. Tell at Pat McCrory NC to stop this bill, and she gave that link to him. Obviously, it didn't work, but do you know of any blowback that might come from this?
I think we're just seeing the beginning of
the reaction. I was going to ask you if you thought this was the end or the beginning. Is this the beginning of something new?
I think we're going to see some reactions. I think we're going to have some repercussions. And I am not going to predict how broad or how long or how far that's going to go, because I'm going to focus on helping make sure Charlotte is making tomorrow better than today for all of its citizens, And that's what I'm going to continue to do.
Does the city of Charlotte, does any municipality in North Carolina have any cards to play, or does the legislature hold all the cards?
I think that the legislature holds all the cards in the legal arena. I think that our citizens are incredibly powerful. Our business owners, our community leaders, our faith leaders are incredibly powerful in a democracy. And I think that they will have some things to say, and the conversation will continue.
A large majority of North Carolinians polled said that they were not in favor of Charlotte's ordinance, but a slim majority polled said they did believe that local communities should be free to decide this for themselves and be free of legislative interference on local issues. Could this become an issue in the gubernatorial campaign or in the upcoming race in the legislature?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, it already is an issue. You know,
do people outside of Charlotte care enough to make it an issue?
Well, I can tell you that other cities in North Carolina have been watching this very closely. There is concern about cities not having the authority, even though their voters elected their representatives for their issues, that they don't have a voice. And they're concerned about government overreach. I think that, again, we're not a one-size-fits-all state. Charlotte and Mecklenburg are unique in a lot of ways, and they have unique solutions to unique challenges. There is a lot of concern. I'm in touch with mayors in other cities. I'm in touch with commissioners, and even other states. And there is a lot of concern about this. I think that the conversation is just starting. I think there are repercussions that we're going to hear about for months to come.
Let me share with you some comments that have come in while we've been talking. James on Twitter: I believe that the mayor's position in the LGBT issue will ultimately prevail, and the legislature has taken a big step back. Julie on Twitter: this voter is proud of the work the mayor is doing to make Charlotte welcoming and inclusive. Way to go. Jeremy on Facebook: we have hungry children in our schools and an escalating crime problem, and this was her first priority, knowing that Raleigh would do this, essentially a political stunt at the expense of LGBT. Patty on Twitter: change comes from courageous leadership, not gay men throwing others under the bus to protect themselves. Gay folks like your emailer make me embarrassed to be LGBTQ. Jennifer Roberts' courage is not at fault that we are saddled by a bigoted assembly. Colin on Facebook: I believe the bill that the North Carolina Assembly and the governor passed will have an effect on the receipt of federal funds going to things such as schools and libraries. And Lou emails: thank you, Mayor Roberts, for doing what is right, period.
Well, I believe that people in Charlotte and people in North Carolina we have a great city and a great state. And I think the conversation will continue, and I will continue to listen to all sides of that. And I will also continue to work on many other priorities, which I have been moving forward at the same time. This was not the very first thing that I did. I've been in office since December the 7th. there are quite a few things that
a date that will
ongoing.
Live in infamy.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, it will. But I am truly focused on so many other things, and we just happen to have scheduled this conversation for the day after a General Assembly vote that many of us didn't know would happen so quickly. So, but I do appreciate that, and I am on Twitter and Facebook, and I read a lot of comments, and I want everyone listening to know that I read all those comments, and I know that we have diverse opinions. I think that diversity is a strength. And I want to build on the diversity Charlotte has, North Carolina has. Part of the reason that I'm working with our international community is that I see a lot of immigrant business owners who are doing great work in the community. I want to make sure they have access to success. I want to make sure our African-American business owners and women business owners and small business owners have access to success. We have great innovation. We have great creativity. That's all about being inclusive. Creativity comes in all forms.
When we come back, I want to talk about some of the other things that have been going on, not just this in your first 100 days in office, including equal pay for female city workers and small business access and Eastland Mall, among many other things. We'll talk about that with Mayor Jennifer Roberts in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Bojangles, featuring the Bojangler Fish Filet Sandwich, Alaskan Pollock Filet with seasoning on a toasted butter bun, available at area Bojangles. Also, ScoopCharlotte.com, providing women in Charlotte daily info on shopping, fitness, dining, things to do, and more, presenting the Scoop each week with ScoopCharlotte.com. The bombings in Belgium have left many wondering why authorities were unable to thwart the attacks. Understanding what's behind unique security challenges for Belgium and what these latest attacks means for threats in Europe and beyond. The topic of the conversation in 20 minutes at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. If you want to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Reach us at WFAE on Facebook or at Charlotte Talks on Twitter. We're coming right back.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
An American college student is facing 15 years of hard labor in North Korea.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
As for the Republicans, Donald Trump won North Carolina, but it was a very close race. He beat Senator Ted Cruz by less than 4 points.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins with the Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts on her coming here to talk about her first 100 days, and all we've talked about is one incident because of what happened in the news yesterday at the legislature. But before we move on from that, you said that this whole thing, the basis of this, is discrimination.
That's correct.
Now, we understand, I think it, with hindsight, and we probably understood it at the time, what the fundamental reason for discrimination against black people was in the 1950s and beyond. What is the fundamental reason for discrimination here, in your mind?
Well, what I've heard when I've asked people why they want to discriminate is because they don't want to support a lifestyle they don't believe in.
And the basis of that is what?
A lot of times it's their religious views, their personal views, and you know, people who have gay members in their family understand it's not a lifestyle. It's the way people were born. But there are a lot of people who believe it's a choice still, and they don't believe in that and supporting that. They think it's a sin. They think it's a choice. And that most of that comes from religious perspectives. There may be others as well. But that's where we are.
Let's move on. Aside from getting this ordinance passed and the aftermath of that passage, how would you characterize your first 100 days in office?
It has been a whirlwind. It has been a whirlwind for a lot of reasons. Because Charlotte is one of the fastest growing cities in America, we are getting about 44 new people a day moving here. We've seen from demographics that we have a lot of young people under the age of 35 coming here for jobs, coming here for opportunities. We have a great area for entertainment and sports and museums that is attractive to them. We also have people retiring here and moving here. So it's been a whirlwind because we are managing growth that is explosive. We are trying to manage infrastructure and look forward, especially with things like our transit plan, our zoning ordinance, which we're going to be reviewing and updating. Our housing policies, all these things, looking forward to continuing to support that growth with resources we know that are challenged. And we also have been in the national spotlight for a number of things, Super Bowl, but also we had the Chinese ambassador come here. Never before has the Chinese ambassador done their New Year's celebration outside of Washington. They did it here in Charlotte. We had 500 people at a gala, and those folks want to continue connections with that country. We've got a lot of people here from Latin America, from India. We have more conventions coming. I've been in Washington several times, not just for our legislative agenda with our federal delegate, but also because other mayors want to meet the new Charlotte mayor. The White House wants to make connections with the new Charlotte mayor. Charlotte is up and coming, growing, and we're getting a lot of notice, which is wonderful, but it's been a whirlwind and juggling a lot of things at once.
You campaigned, as a recent press release reminded us, on a promise of spreading economic opportunity to all corners of the city. And in your first 100 days, you convened a community summit on out-of-school time and strengthened ties with the international business community and presided over the passage of that ordinance, which we've been talking about. What have you done so far to spread economic opportunity?
Well, there have been a number of things. The city of Charlotte has a business inclusion program, which does outreach with small businesses. It does seminars. It does networking that helps small businesses get certified, that helps them have access to opportunities, that puts them on that subcontractors list that the city and its larger contractors use to try to make our contracting for public expenses look like our community in terms of including African-American, minority, small and women-owned businesses. And one of the great things that I have done that's pretty unique, I have had several town hall meetings in Spanish I speak Spanish fluently. I spent a couple years in the Dominican Republic with the Foreign Service, and I have continued to grow connections with the Latino and Hispanic community to recognize the economic force that they are in so much of our city, in our construction industry and communications and so many things that we're working on. So we actually had a meeting with 30 contractors to help them get certified, and that meeting was in Spanish. So this is one of the areas that we're going to continue to grow and to provide opportunity and to bring jobs and to grow jobs.
What's the reaction among the people in the room when you conduct a meeting like that in Spanish?
Well, I tell you, now that they, now they know, all the Spanish press covers me, but a lot of times when people don't know that the mayor speaks Spanish, they're impressed, surprised, and pleased. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we now have reporters from Univision who are based in Raleigh who come to Charlotte to cover my meetings and to hear from me on different issues that our community is facing. We have, you know, I've been all over some of the press that even covers, you know, in South America and Central America. And I think that's important. We want people to recognize Charlotte as a global city. And we know there are more opportunities. We just had the Brookings Institute here yesterday mm-hmm. with the Global Vision Leaders Group that Central Piedmont Community College and Tony Zayas has been leading. And we know that there are even more opportunities for Charlotte companies to export and to grow. And it's not just our large companies, but small and medium-sized companies. There is more opportunity. We've got great connections with other parts of the world. We can build on that for commerce. And we know that companies that export grow faster, pay better, and are more successful.
Let's bring up another sticky wicket. What's going on with City Manager Ron Carley? You formed a special five-person committee in December to study whether he should stay or go, and then a few weeks ago he decided not to seek a renewal of his contract. No one fought to keep him, which sends the message that the council wanted him gone, but they extended his contract by 3 months, which will take him through the budget process, gave him a raise, a substantial raise, actually. Makes more money in 3 months than I make in a year. And a $25,000 bonus. So do you like him or not? Would you have preferred for him to stay?
I think Ron Carley has been a tremendous public servant to the city of Charlotte. And he brings experience in everything from transit to emergency management and things that Charlotte has been facing. And I think that he has done a great job for the years he's been here. I am enjoying working with him right now. He truly cares about the city. He is willing to put in the long hours. He's willing to do what's necessary to make sure that we are moving the city forward and confronting some tough issues. And, you know, the council makes a decision. Some of them have worked with him longer than I have. I've been in conversation with them about, you know, a transition and how we move forward. And we're going to have a search firm. I think that Charlotte is recognized nationally as a great place to work, as a city with lots of growth and even better future, you know, opportunities. And I think we're going to get some great candidates.
Your committee that you put together to look over Ron Carley and whether or not we should renew his contract could have recommended that the contract be renewed. They could have recommended that the contract not be removed. They could have renewed. They could have recommended that he stay on without a contract, being an at-will employee. What did they recommend?
They did not actually get to the point of making a recommendation, and it never came to the full council because Mr. Carley sent out his desire and his letter earlier than the committee had a chance to actually make a decision. So that decision was not made. He initiated and said that he preferred not to renew the contract and that he had some other things in mind for the next stage of his career. We extended it for 3 months because the budget process is in mid-swing. We know that he knows all the aspects of the city government the best, that he's done a great job managing the budget in the past, and they wanted that continuity.
You said that you kind of enjoy working with him.
Absolutely.
Would you like him to stay?
I would like him to stay. If he's got other things that he wants to do, I respect that. And
is the genesis of the problem the fact that Anthony Fox, your predecessor, brought him in and told him to be the face of the city And he did that. But that rubbed some city councils the wrong way because they're the elected ones and they want to be the face of the city.
There are all kinds of reasons that he may have decided not to continue, that he may have had different relations with different parts of the council. You know, I think the important thing is that we have had good management, that we have a city that is growing, and that we're going to have a great opportunity to find the next manager.
He has streetcar experience because he was in Arlington County, Virginia before he came here, and they are putting in a streetcar, as we are too. I believe that we are out of funds, transit funds, but we have a question on Twitter. What is your plan for the streetcar extension?
We're not out of funds. We actually have a phase two grant for the streetcar, $75 million from the federal government that has been approved. We have set aside city funds that will be matching that. So the second phase, it will go from Johnson C. Smith right up to Central Avenue, not quite getting to Central Avenue. That second phase is going to be starting very soon. And the strength of that, not just the investment in the east and west side of our city and the connection there. We know that the east and west have not grown as rapidly and not been as successful or had the same economic prosperity as the north and the south. We want opportunity to be everywhere in our city, so that's a visible sign of that. But also, the streetcar is going to be a connector between the red line and the blue line, between the relocated Amtrak station that will be at the Gateway station. We have a federal grant for that as well. And that streetcar will be that essential connection. Not to mention that it's being used quite a bit every day, double the ridership anticipated, because people are using it. You know, it goes to the transit center. So people are riding the bus and then from the transit center going that last mile to the hospital, to Central Piedmont Community College, to the restaurants that are along Elizabeth Avenue. It is getting a lot of use.
It's free.
It will continue. It will continue to get a lot of use, but if people were transferring with their initial bus fare, it would also be free. If they're riding the bus to get on a different mode but with the same ticket, that would also be the case. So it is being used.
Yesterday, when the legislature overturned our LGBTQ ordinance, they also prohibited local governments from setting minimum or living wage standards throughout the state. They can't do that now, but you can. It does not prohibit cities from paying their employees whatever they want to pay them. So Ashley on Twitter asks, how is the work on your campaign promise to raise city workers' wages to $15 an hour going?
We are in the midst of discussing in our budget. And by the way, the setting of the minimum wage for the entire city was never anything that we had the authority to do. We can't tell McDonald's what to pay its workers. And I think the legislature just, I don't know why.
They just codified it.
They just made sure we really knew that. But in terms of our own employees, I have asked for what our lowest paid employees are earning, and it's $13 an hour. I'm hopeful in the next budget discussion, we're going to push that to go to $13.50. And our goal, there's some other cities that have said that by 2020 they want to be at $15 an hour. I think that should be Charlotte's goal. I'm going to continue to support that.
And you've also pledged to bring equal pay for female and male city workers. Where does that stand now, and what has to occur to make female pay equal to male pay?
We are still – I discovered that we have 250 different job categories and classifications in the city of Charlotte, and we are still in the process of – looking through all those different job classifications to make sure that we are paying men and women equally. I haven't gotten the results of that study yet. When we do, and this is an internal study, we're not paying extra money for this. When we get the results of that, if we are paying equally, I want to make sure that we make that a big announcement, that we're showing that. If we're not, then we're going to correct that. We're going to work that into our budget.
I'm going to be hazy on the details of this, but there was a big story over the weekend that a study came out, and that when women start taking over jobs in certain categories, not only do they make less than men, but the pay level for those categories of jobs begins to decline. Do you understand why that might be? And are you making the same that your predecessor made?
I am making so little.
We don't pay the mayor great, do we?
It's around $23,000 a year. So it maybe covers expenses. I don't know. But Now I forgot your question.
It's all right. That doesn't matter. During your campaign, you talked a lot about education, and the city really has nothing to do with education. It's a county thing. But you have been focusing on how to improve out-of-school time for young people in middle and high school. And is that what you had in mind on the campaign trail when you talked about education?
Absolutely. The city is not in control of the schools, but the way to be a great partner is to work in that out-of-school time. And I heard this on the campaign trail. I heard it from grandparents. I heard it from parents, aunts and uncles, people who had young folks in school who were getting into trouble between the hours of 3 and 6. And they said, we need a positive program. We need something to engage them with. I saw that there was not access in parts of our city, especially to low-cost programs. This is an issue. And so I have mobilized. We have members of the faith community who've never been asked before to open their doors to out-of-school time programs, especially some Latino and Hispanic churches I have working with us. But we have a lot of partners who are very excited about this initiative. They know that tutoring, that enrichment, especially the arts, can make a huge difference to keeping kids in school on grade level, graduating, and successful for the future. Our police chief talks about it being a crime deterrent. So there's a lot of energy and excitement, and we're going to continue to grow this initiative to make sure that we're improving access.
The city's been trying to unload Eastland Mall property for a long time. They just turned over 10 acres of the 80 acres to CMS at below market level. Will that prevent a developer from coming in and working with the other 70 acres? Very quickly, only have 10 seconds.
Absolutely not. That school is going to be a visible sign that we're committed to having something happen there. It's going to have activity. It's going to have after-school use. There are soccer fields that are going to be there. And if you look at all the schools that are in the Uptown area, you look at the commercial center of the Uptown, we've got 5 schools right in our Uptown area. So obviously it's not a deterrent.
Jennifer Roberts, Mayor of Charlotte, thank you for the hour.